Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest and partner, John Frieden. Welcome back, John.
Good morning, Wayne.
It's great to have you back on the show. John is a shareholder at Odin, Feldman & Pittleman. He is an e-commerce lawyer, a litigator. He is a graduate undergrad from the University of Virginia in engineering, electrical engineering, right?
Systems engineering.
And then he also is a graduate of the University of Richmond Law School, and he's an occasional participant on Blueprint for Wealth, and he's always got interesting things to talk about on internet law. We've talked about privacy. We've talked about e-commerce law. Today, we're going to talk about blogging. You have a blog.
I have a blog.
What's
you
your
have
blog?
A blog?
What is
My
your blog?
My blog is e-commerce law. It's at www.ecommercelaw.typepad.com.
It's a great blog, by the way. And of course, my blog is www.blueprintforwealth.org. Well, what is a blog?
A blog simply is a shortened form of the word weblog. Where that came from, I'm not sure. But essentially, all it is an online journal, Wayne.
Okay.
It can serve as a source of news or of commentary, educational materials, even a blogger's personal musings. There literally are blogs covering every topic of human endeavor or human interest.
Is it really that popular? I mean, we hear that everybody's blogging, right? Is it popular?
It is popular, Wayne. Like anything else, there are a few people in the minority who are very active in it, and then a larger group who sort of shares the content. About 11% of internet users actively blog, but a full one-third of internet users read blogs on a regular basis.
Well, that's a pretty significant population if you really figure out how many people are on the internet. A third are reading blogs? I read blogs.
Well, you read blogs? Absolutely. And when you think about the fact that 80% of Americans have access to the internet on a
wow.
high-speed basis, you're looking at a lot of people.
Wow. Now, who's more likely to blog than others?
Well, certain types of people, certain professions are more likely to blog than others. It wouldn't surprise anyone, Wayne, that lawyers like you and I are more likely than the average person in the population to blog.
Why? Why is that?
They tend to be lawyers, for the most part, tend
bombastic.
To be bombastic. That's a good word. That's a good safe word, Wayne.
So are there legal limitations on what you can say on a blog and what you can't do on a blog?
Well, the law as it applies to entering internet communications, for the most part, is fairly similar to traditional forms of medium.
Okay.
There are no broad restrictions. And in fact, in certain instances, Congress has actually enacted statutes that are designed to make speech freer online.
Okay.
Certainly the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, which guarantees freedom of the press and freedom of speech, applies to online speech as it would to speech anywhere else, on a street corner, in a newspaper, or in a book.
Okay.
But of course, you know, the First Amendment isn't without its limitations, as you and I both know.
All right.
In terms of blogging and any other sort of speech online, one has to be careful of really four categories of limitations. And the first is intellectual property limitations. The second is related to intellectual property limitations, and that has to do with trade secrets.
Okay.
The third is defamation laws. And then the fourth are laws dealing with the right to privacy.
Defamation, and we'll talk about all four of these, but defamation is one that people don't really always take into consideration, but they should, because there is a severe consequence for failing to do so, right?
Well, absolutely. And in the old days, to defame someone, if you didn't have access to a printing press or weren't a writer for a newspaper, you had to talk amongst your friends or stand on the street corner and say nasty things about them. Now, you have access to millions and millions of people online. And so the harmful and the offensive things that you can say online reach a lot more people. You know, simply put, in most states, and every state's law is a little different because defamation is a common law tort. So it's addressed by state law, and there's no statute in place that governs it nationwide.
Okay.
But to the extent that you're making false statements of fact about another person that cause harm, that's defamation.
It's what we've commonly referred to in local jurisdictions as slander or libel, correct?
Absolutely. Libel and slander are both forms of defamation.
Right.
And in that instance, the distinction there is whether it's written or whether it's oral.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of the internet, it's all written. But many states have abolished essentially the distinction between libel and slander and just refer to it as defamation.
So a false statement that does injury or does harm is actionable. Somebody can sue you for that.
Absolutely.
So you better be careful about what you're blogging.
Absolutely. You have to be careful about what you have to say about people, just like you would in polite company. The problem is with the internet, is that you are given the ability, the technological ability, but you also have the legal ability to speak anonymously, that people forget the fact that their words have consequences. And at a dinner party, you and I would be restricted by peer pressure and by wanting to maintain our reputations in terms
professional ethics and other issues, yeah.
And a lot of other guidelines of polite society in terms of what we would be willing to say about another person.
Right.
Some people forget that when they go online and they speak anonymously. They don't feel the pressure of society bearing upon them to be civil. And that's where they run into problems.
Is there a distinction between people saying something about somebody who's famous and somebody who's not?
There absolutely is. Because this defamation concept works against the freedom of speech concept, which is protected under the Constitution, there is an exception or a change in the analysis where the victim of the defamation is a public figure.
Uh-huh.
There's a lower standard, essentially, in terms of how careful you have to be when you talk about a public figure, particularly if the figure is a political figure. And that's mm-hmm. supposed to create a situation that permits people to speak disparagingly of their elected officials, but it also permits you to speak disparagingly of movie stars, for instance, or comedians.
So you just have to have something called malice in order really to get into trouble there.
Absolutely. Absent malice, you're not going to find yourself liable for defamation against the public.
All right. So we've beaten the heck out of the defamation issue. You mentioned intellectual property laws need to be considered when you're engaging in blogging. Give us some examples of how the intellectual property laws might come into play.
Sure. There's two categories of intellectual property laws that come into play when one's blogging. Patent doesn't really enter into the equation very often. It's copyright and trademark. There's some confusion amongst the general population as to those. I get questions all the time where somebody asks me about a copyright, they really mean a trademark or vice versa. But a copyright applies to works of original authorship. So
okay.
A song, a book, a magazine, article, a photograph. And the owner, in most instances, the author or the creator, maintains certain exclusive rights with regard to that work of authorship. The owner has the exclusive right to reproduce the copyrighted work, to use it, to create other works from that work called derivative works, to sell, lease, or lend that work, and also to publicly display or perform the work.
Okay.
Those are the exclusive rights of the copyright owner. And in instances where one is blogging, many instances, even in personal blogs, but certainly in news and commentary blogs or legal blogs like ours, we find ourselves in a position where we want to comment on the copyrighted work of another.
Okay.
And so bloggers get themselves into trouble by doing that in a way that infringes the copyright of their individual who has created that original work.
Give me an example of how I might get into trouble and violate copyright law if I did something on my blog.
For instance, and this happens often in terms of images, in terms of photographs, a lot of bloggers I know, even in the legal field, in an effort to make their blog more visually appealing to the audience, will associate photographs with a blog story. For instance, if I did a blog story about a legal case regarding, Facebook.
Okay.
Or Google, I might include a picture of someone sitting behind a desk looking at a laptop that shows the Facebook homepage. You can find these pictures all over the web. They're very, very easy to copy to your hard drive and associate with your blog. But the mm-hmm. problem is that picture is owned by someone. It might be the person in the picture. It probably is the person that took the picture. It might be someone else entirely. And if you use that photograph on your blog without the permission of the person that owns it, you've infringed their copyright. Now, the good news for those people that use photographs in terms of their blogs is there are lots of free sources of photographs that you can use for blogs. For instance, Flickr, which is a photo sharing site.
Right.
Flickr.com. A lot of the people who take photographs and put them on Flickr will license them to users under what's called a Creative Commons license, which is essentially if your kids do Mad Libs. My kids just started getting into Mad Libs, but mm-hmm. it's like a Mad Lib fill-in-the-blank license agreement where they say what you can do with the photograph. And they essentially, in many instances, will give you permission to use it for free as long as you don't do it in a commercial sense. So if you're just doing it for an educational blog, that would fit within the license. And then you can use their photograph in terms of your blog.
Or for fun, too.
Absolutely.
Right? Just as long as you're not selling it or reselling it to somebody else. So that's an example of how copyright might be infringed. What about trademark law?
Trademarks are distinct from copyrights. A trademark is a source identifier. What it is, it's a word, it's a phrase, it's a logo, a symbol, a picture that associates in the consuming public's mind an association between that mark and a product or service. What it does is it tells people who will be buying things or services who vouches for that thing or service, or who made it, who speaks for it.
Okay.
So it's very valuable in terms of associating goodwill associated with a product or service in the mind of the buying public.
You mentioned Google and Facebook. I mean, if somebody, I imagine if somebody used Google's logo on their web page to promote a product or something like that, would that be also a potential trademark infringement as well?
It absolutely would be. In any instances where you use the logo of another company in a way that is likely to cause confusion amongst the buying public, you've infringed that owner's copy or that owner's trademark.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we mentioned that there are four areas of concern in the law. We've talked about defamation. We've talked about copyright and trademark under intellectual property. What about trade secrets?
Trade secrets are related in many people's minds to intellectual property because oftentimes a trade secret is a piece of information, either a formula or a function that a company hides from the general public because it forms the basis of their revenue model.
So how would I violate trade secret protections of another on my blog? What's an example of something that might happen?
Well, let's say that you worked for the Coca-Cola company and you had access to the famous secret formula for Coke, and you wanted to blog about your job. And as part of the blog post, you published part of that formula. That would be a problem from the trade secrets from the trade secrets perspective, because what you've done is you've taken your employer's trade secret and made it open to the world.
And there's also the violation of someone's right to privacy. How might I violate somebody's right to privacy on my blog?
You know, we don't come across it very often here because Virginia doesn't recognize a right of privacy in the same way that some states in the West do. The right to privacy, simply put, is the right to be left alone.
Mm-hmm.
And the right to privacy is invaded when another person makes an unreasonable intrusion upon the seclusion of another, misappropriates that person's name or likeness, or gives unreasonable publicity to another's private life, or provides publicity which unreasonably places another in a false light. So, for instance, if you're doing a blog post, you've written a blog post in one of these states or about an individual living in one of these states that recognizes a strong right to privacy, and you, for instance, one of your coworkers, maybe she got pregnant out of wedlock, something along those lines that wasn't commonly known to the public, and you publish a story about that on your blog, that would obviously be a situation where you might have some concern about whether or not you've invaded that right to privacy. But that's a great example, Wayne, of something that no one would do at a dinner party in polite company, but people do online, unfortunately.
They do it all the time. Now, wait a second. You said if the blog is created in a state that recognizes the right to privacy, well, I'm in Virginia. That person lives in California. I mean, the internet is ubiquitous. It's worldwide. Does California law apply to me, even though I'm in Virginia, because I published it so that somebody in California could see it?
Well, the unsatisfying answer to that question is it depends.
Maybe.
And unfortunately, you know, the internet, the one area where traditional legal principles have found problem with the internet is the application of what we refer to as personal jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And because the internet can touch on so many states at the same time so easily, it's difficult to determine where a court may actually have the power to reach you.
So if I'm a blogger, or for listeners that are bloggers or thinking about blogging, what are the one or two things that you would tell them to do to avoid problems on their blog?
If I had to just distill it down to a couple things, the first thing is to be aware that the things that you get online, the content, the pictures that you see online are owned by someone. And if they're not owned by you, then you need to carefully think about how you're using them. Many instances in terms of news and commentary and critique, you can use bits and pieces of a copyrighted work. That's what's called fair use.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fairly gray area. It's difficult to give a bright line test. But as long as you're not doing it in a way that's going to hurt the fundamental market for that, then you're probably fine. But the overriding thing is that you must think about the fact that people own this property and that you aren't free to just use it as you wish.
To get in touch with you, John Frieden, how do people get in touch with you?
Well, they can look at my blog and contact me that way. It's e-commerce law. It's www.ecommercelaw.typepad.com. My office number at the firm is 703-218-2125.
And thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Thank you very much, Wayne.
Thanks for listening and have a great week.